All right, so we are holding on Nunjimul Amud Aleph, about a little bit past the middle of the Amud by the two dots, the line begins in Mokum. We discussed yesterday the issue that when it comes to a chatas, the blood has to be applied on the top half of the mizbeach. We had two Tanoim, Rebbe and Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon, disagreeing exactly where. Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon saying it has to be on the keren, on the protrusion that sticks out above the roof of the mizbeach. We had Rebbe saying that not. Well, thank you, Rebbe. Yeah, I meant to bring the even forgotten, so thank you. Okay. So you have Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon who says you have to do it someplace on the actual protrusion over here.
Do you have copies of that?
No, just the one copy. You have Rebbe who says that it can be any place from the top of the keren all the way down to the chuta sikra, the red line in the middle of the mizbeach. And then within Rebbe's opinion, we had the machloket of Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Elazar. Does Rebbe mean that in addition? Now Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says as long as it's someplace on the body of the keren, then it doesn't have to be exactly on the edge. It can be an amma in each direction because the keren is an amma by an amma. Does Rebbe agree to that concept and therefore he extends it all the way down to here?
Obviously not.
Or maybe he does, because he says that it can be any place from here down to the chuta sikra. So does that mean also that he allows it both horizontally, five amas down, as well as vertically, five amas down, as well as horizontally, an amma in each direction? In other words, you're taking the keren and extending the body of the keren, five full amas downwards. Or does he mean it can be any place on the top half, but it has to strictly be on the edge? Okay, so those were the different opinions. And the last thing we mentioned is that Rebbe... We don't know. The halacha. Who is the halacha like? So we did say in the Gemara, we quoted a braita that said the ideal mitzvah is to do it on the chud, on the edge. But if you do it in amma, either way, then less one bar is not a problem. The Rambam duly paskins that way, and the Kesef Mishnah explains. On the one hand, we paskin like Rebbe against Rebbe Elazar ben Rav Shimon. On the other, so therefore we have to allow it all the way down. Therefore we can allow it all the way down to the chuta sikra.
We can allow it.
It can be any place from here down to here. On the other hand, since also we have Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yechanan arguing what Rebbe means, we don't have a basis to be machmir and say that he means daska on the edge. That is the ideal mitzvah, but nevertheless. Okay. And the last thing we said is that...
Recorded history.
Who are you going to have? We don't really have a lot of history books from the time of the Bishop. It's just Josephus. He himself was a Kohen. Fine, but he doesn't get into that.
He was a Kohen, yeah.
But he doesn't get into that level of detail. Did he ever even serve in the Bishop? Actually, I have no idea. But even if he did, he doesn't get into that level of detail in his histories about the exact details. Yeah. Okay, onward. Okay, the last thing we mentioned is we have a pasuk in Yechezkel that mentions that the Har El, meaning the Mizbeach, is four amas, and we said that's where Rebbe gets his opinion from. He holds that it means that Rishus Kronos Arba, that from the Kronos you extend downward another four amas, which gets you down to the Chuta Sikra, and all of that is considered to be an extension of the Kronos. Okay. Tananha, so we learn in a Mishnah elsewhere, in Midot, so you had a red line that painted around the middle of the mizbeach, the exact midpoint of the height. In order to distinguish between the blood that had to go on the top half and the blood that had to go on the bottom. Yes, so as you can see over here, you have in the picture, you have this decorative thing under the soivid. This course is the thick line underneath it. So you have the soivik that the Kohen is standing on. Underneath that, you have a decorative thing. So no, that's the thing. So you have, there's an amma from the bottom of the, from the soivik until the chuta sikra. In this picture, they filled up that amma with decorations. On the real Bais Mikdash, were there decorations there? We don't know. But anyway, there's a thick black line running underneath it. That is the chuta sikra. Okay. So, Minohanimili, where do we have this concept that there has to be a distinction between the top half and the bottom half marked off like that? Because you have a pasuk by the Mishkan, by the Mizbeach in the Mishkan. The pasuk describes how there was a netting around the middle of it. And it says the netting should reach to the middle of the Mizbeach, meaning the Torah wants there to be a distinction of a marked off thing to mark off the upper half from the lower, where the upper half, where blood of Chafetz Behema and Olaf the Oif is supposed to go, versus the lower half, where most Korbanos the Behema and Chafetz Oif. In the Mishkan then, there was a netting. There was a netting made out of copper that surrounded the Mizbeach. and that one edge of it, either the top or the bottom edge, was marked off where the midpoint in the Mizbeach is, and in the Beis Hamikdash, instead, for that purpose, they had a red line painted around the middle of it. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Shiri Adam Lechola, we said the rest of the blood of the Chatos is poured onto the Yisod Droimi, we said onto the southern side of the base. So we have to remember, again, here we have, I've mentioned before, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara later, that the Yisod went around two full sides of the Mizbeach. It went around the west, it went all along the west side and all along the north side. It stuck out towards the south and towards the east. We'll learn later on, three different opinions among the Shonim, how exactly it stuck out. But at any rate, the point is there was a little bit of it, there was some part of it on the southern side or on the southwestern corner. And that's what we mean by Yisod Jeremy. So now why Dafka the Yisod Jeremy? So turn it up on it, we learn it a bit. When the Pasuk says that the Kohen should pour out the blood of Yisod Mizbeach to the Yisod of the Mizbeach, Zeh Yisod Jeremy. This means the southern corner of the Yisod. After Omer Zeh Yisod Jeremy, so you're saying it means the southern. Or you know the Yisod Ma'arabi, how do you know? Maybe it means the western one. And in fact, the Alamed Sosim Min Amafurish. In fact, you should say, look, in this case, it doesn't specify which side it is, so that's Sosim. In a previous case, it does mention more explicitly, because we said before on Daphnon Aleph that once he finishes, the Pasuk says that he pours the blood of the Chatzaris HaPnimius onto the Yisod Mizbach HaOlash at Pesach Oyom Lod, implying the side of the Yisod that is directly in front of Pesach Oyom Lod, which is the west side. So there it clearly indicates that it's the west side. Why shouldn't we say that in that case that here by the Chassos it also means the west side? Where are you getting that it means the southern side? A Marcha, so you answer like this.
Both sides, you could say.
But if you know by the Chatzaris HaPnimius, it has to be the west side because that faces the Echel, then
the sprinkling.
The pouring of the Shiraim.
The pouring of the Shiraim.
It has to be on the west side because that's the side that you're supposed to see when you come out of the Echel. Right. Well then, logically, in that case, if we have another topic, where it doesn't specify what side, the five of Hashem would be the same thing.
It would be the western.
There would be again the western side. It would be a binyan kind of thing. Amarta, but you say no. Yolamed yiridosim in a kevesh litiyosim in a hechol. Make a different analogy though. So, draw an analogy between the first part that he sees when he comes off the kevesh versus the first part that he sees when he comes out of the hechol. Meaning, yeah, this is you're the guy that Rav Kolpio sent, I guess. You're the guy who was referred to me by Rav Kolpio. Hello. All right.
What are you talking about?
Okay, Rabbi Kolpio mentioned to me that there was somebody who would mention about my shiur too. So, we'll do introductions. We'll do introductions and all later. Right now we're in the middle. So, okay. So we're saying like this. You wanted to draw an analogy between the Chatzos HaPnimius, where it says that the Nun Gimel Amud Aleph holding, where the Shirei Adam go on the Yisod Ma'arabi, because that's what you first see when you come out of the Hechel, versus the Chatzos HaChitzonius, where it doesn't say what side. But you're saying, no, the analogy is rather different. Show him my glasses. Okay. So the analogy rather should be as follows. Yelomid yidosim, and akevishli siyosim in a echol. Rather than learning just that it's going to be the same side, learn what he comes across first. When he comes down from the kevesh, when he comes off the kevesh versus what he comes across first when he goes out of the echol. My yitziyosim in a echol b'samachloi, just like when he goes out of the echol with the remainder of the blood of the Chatzaris HaPnimius, which side of the yisod does he come to first? The western side. That's why he does it on the western side. After yitziyosim in a kevesh b'samachloi, the same way, when we're talking about that he comes off the kevesh, the first part of the yisod that he sees is the southern one. Now, why is that? First of all, you have the kevesh itself is on the southern side of the Mizbeach. So therefore, the southern side is naturally closest to him. But especially because we're going to learn in the next parak, we talked briefly yesterday about the one ramp that goes up to the soldier. That's what he uses to go around the soldier in the first place. We're going to learn in the next parak that there's also another kevesh that leads down to the third drain. So when he's coming off the kevesh, you turn and you go down that. Tosfos also learns, Rashi learns, Tosfos learns there's also this one to come down from the soldier. Rashi doesn't learn that. According to Rashi, it comes out apparently that he would have to, after he finishes going around the circle, he'd have to walk all the way back around and come down here. But anyway, then he has this little ramp over here to go down to the southern part of the Yesod. Here, you can take a closer look. So that's the first side that he comes to, and therefore that's the analogy to draw. That just like when he comes out of the Hefel, the first part of the Yesod that he comes to is the western side, the same way when he comes off the Kevesh, the first part that he comes to is the southern side. And that is why, that's where he should be pouring the blood.
The first part that he comes to.
When he comes off the Kevesh, yes, that's what we're saying. Tanya, we're learning a Braisa, but we have other opinions on that subject. Again, I mentioned at the beginning of the Perek that even though all the Mishnayos and the Perek are presented as if they're universally agreed halacha, we've seen a couple of times already, not all of it is. We have different opinions on some of these things. So Tanya, we're learning a Braisa. Rabbi Shmuel and Zevazei Yisod Ma'arabi. Rabbi Shmuel says that the blood of both kinds, both the Chatzaris HaPnimius and the Chatzaris HaChitzonius, is spilled on the Yisod Ma'arabi, on the western side of the Yisod. So he, in other words, says that the analogy between the psukim is taka teaches us the same side. Not like we just said that it means it teaches us the one that you come to first, but it teaches us literally the same side. Rav Shimon Yochoyim is Zevzei Yisod Zroi. Rav Shimon Yochoyim has a third opinion that both the ones from inside the Hechel and the ones that are done outside on the Mizeh HaChitzen, all the Shiraim are spilled on the southern side. So we have to figure out why. The Shleim Lamander Om Yisod Ma'arabi. The one opinion that says both Ma'arabi, one that says both Zeraimi, and our Mishnayos in this Perek, which are a third opinion, which is that the ones for the Karbonas of Yom Kippur and the Parhel and Davish or Sibur or whatever are on the third Ma'arabi, and the other ones and the Hataris Apostonius are on the third Zeraimi. So, Vishleim Lamander on the Yisod Ma'arabi, I can understand according to the Vishmol, who says that you pour all of them on the Yisod Ma'arabi. Fine. Well, the way he gets that, Kasava Yulamid Sosim and Amapurish. As he just said, he follows the same basic underlying principle as the previous Tanya, that Sosim, we learn the unspecified, Amapurish, from the specified. So if by the specified one, by the Hatoi Sapnimius, it specifically says that he should pour it on the Yisod, which is Asher Petach Olamoid, which is in front of the door, meaning the western one, then the same thing would be by the regular Chatoris where it doesn't specify. El Lamando Omer Yisod Jeremy, but according to Rav Shimon, who says you pour all of them on the southern side, my time. Now why would he be saying that?
Where did he get it from?
And I need the diagrams back, please, because we have yet another diagram to explain what might be. Okay. You do. Why don't you sit in the middle over here so that every time you
take a projector.
Sure.
Put a projector on one side of the wall.
Sure.
Projector on the wall.
Okay, sure. Okay, Amar Rav Asi. So Rav Asi says it's like this: Kasavar Hai Tana. The reason is because Rav Shimon, the reason why he says all of them go on the southern side is as follows: Kasavar Hai Tana. He holds Kulei Mizbeach the Suffering Koyin. He holds the entire Mizbeach is in the northern half of the Azara. We're going to have in the next paragraph. We're going to deal with a machloikas. We're going to deal with the Machloikas Tanoim, which we find in Armistech, that we find in Midas, we find in a couple of places. Where exactly in the Azara was the Mizbeach situated? When we go from east to west, we know you had the front wall of the Hekel, you had 22 Amos, then you had the Mizbeach. And then you have another, then you have 11 Amos for the Kohenim and 11 Amos for the Yisrael. So the east to west thing is that we definitely know. The question is the north to south thing. If this is the Azara over here, and this is the Hekel, was the Mizbeach right in front of the Hekel, or was it more in this direction towards the north, or was it more in this direction towards the south? Rav Shimon now is holding, we're saying that he holds that the Mizbeach was completely in the northern half of the Azara. Which means, therefore, as follows. So Rashi brings two possibilities. It doesn't change. No, it doesn't change. Well, sort of. That's the thing. So therefore,
came out of the
One second. So Rashi explains there's two different ways of learning what we mean with Tzfon HaZara. One way of looking at it is what we do is the Hechol is exactly in the middle of the Azara, or exactly in the middle, in other words, just as far from the north as it is from the south. So therefore, what it is we look at the middle of the door of the Hechol, and the middle of the door of the Hechol is exactly the same as the midpoint between north and south of the Azara. The Mizbeach was one way of looking at it then. Rashi's first way, rather, is as follows. We figure out what we mean by the northern, when we say the Mizbeach was all on the northern side, means like this.
Included the Kevesh?
No, not the Kevesh. What we mean is, okay, we mean the Mizbeach itself, the square of the Mizbeach itself. So one way of looking at it is, Rashi's first explanation is as follows. We take the door of the Heichal. The door of the Heichal itself is 10 amos wide. We look at, you have a northern doorpost of it and a southern doorpost of it. Rashi's first explanation is that what we do is we measure from the northern doorpost of the Heichal. The Mizbeach was completely on the northern side of that. Meaning, in other words, that no part of the Mizbeach, according to that way of looking at it, no part of the Mizbeach was actually in front of the door of the Heichal. Well, then it comes out then, when you walk out of the Heichal, what's the first part you come to? You don't come to any of the western side of the Yisrael, because that's all in that direction from you. You come to that one Amma where it sticks out towards the south. There,
which Amma?
This over here, you can see it wraps around the corner a little bit. We'll learn later that's one opinion of how it was. But the point is that when you come out of the door of the Heichal and go directly eastward, that little bit of the Yisoid is the part that you meet up with first, not the whole western side, because that's in a different direction. It's northeast of you rather than like this. You're walking straight out and you come directly east.
So you
directly
see the southern part of the
So you see the southern part of that little southern part that sticks out. That's one way of explaining it, that Rashi says. The other way Rashi explains it is the Mizbeach was not quite so far north. What it was is you divide the doorway of the Heichal in two. You have a line that runs down the middle of it. The Mizbeach was north of that line. According to that second assumption, the idea is, fine, you come out of the door of the Heichal, you have a few amos of the western side and one amma of the southern side in front of you, but the assumption is you walk directly out the middle of the door, not closer to one side or the other, and therefore you still come out to that little bit of southern bit. So those are the two explanations of Rashi, how Rav Shimon is saying, therefore, that even when you're walking out of the Heichal, you come into the southern side first.
In either way,
you wouldn't see the entire Mizbeach in front of you. You would either not see directly in front of you any of the western side, only that one Amma of Yisrael that stuck out on the southern side, or you would see a few Ammas of the western side, but that's provided you were walking not in the middle of the doorway. If you walked exactly out the middle of the doorway, then it would be like the first explanation. You'd only see the southern base. Loshen Achav Kulat Pesach Medorim Kari, or another Loshen is that the entire door of the Heichal was south of the Mizbeach. Rashi isn't good at that, because essentially it comes out the same thing. In other words, that the entire Mizbeach, the entire door was south of the Mizbeach. That would be more like the first, that would be another way of describing the first situation. In any case, the point is, Rav Shimon, therefore, is saying that not like we were assuming before that when you come out of the Heichal, the first part of the Mizbeach you see is its western side. No, because its whole western side is moved over compared to it's shifted north from where you are. The part that you see directly in front of you is going to be that southern, is going to be that little one Amma of Yisoid on the southern part. Where were we? Yeah. Okay, so that's why Rav Shimon is saying that even with the Chatzaris HaPnimi, if you're putting them on the southern side, and therefore just the opposite. He says, Yulamed Sosim and Amakurdish. Well, in that case, by the Chatzaris HaChatzonius, you have a double reason to put it on the southern side. Number one, because anyway, you learn from the other one. And number two, because that's the side you come to first when you finish with the Chatzaris HaChatzonius. Okay. Fine. Tonet Ve Rav Yishmael Ki Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Oimrim, the girsa that we have over here in the Gemara is kind of a blend of two different girsas. Tonet Ve Rav Yishmael, they learned in the yeshiva of Rav Yishmael, the one way of being girded is Bir Rav Shimon Ben Yochai, in following, not within Rav Shimon Ben Yochai's opinion, meaning that they taught a brisa which was originally taught in the Beit Medrash of Rav Shimon, that Omrim, that they said, Zevazeh Yisod Ma'arovi, that according to that version, Rav Shimon agreed that it was on the Yisod Ma'arovi. Another possible girsa over here is that they learned Kir Rav Shimon Yechoi, that they learned like Rav Shimon Yechoi, meaning just the opposite, that they followed Rav Shimon Yechoi's opinion, that it's not both Yisod Ma'arovi, but that's both Yisod Durin. The Simonach, and the way to remember, the way to remember that, is the expression Moshu Gavri Lagavra. The Gavri, the people, the men, plural, pulled the singular, the Gavra, the single man in the singular, to their side. So Rashi understands it to mean like this. The Talmidim of Rabbi Shmuel are the Gavri. They're the majority. Rabbi Shimon is the Gavra. He's the minority. He's only one Tana who says his opinion that both of them are Yisrael Durim. They schlepped him over to their side. In other words, they learned that Rabbi Shimon actually agrees with their Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, that it's both Yisod Ma'arov. Mashkor Gavri LeGavra, the men, the Rabbi Shmuel Talmidim, pulled Rabbi Shimon over to their side, and their version of it was that Rabbi Shimon actually agreed, that Rabbi Shimon actually agreed with Rabbi Shmuel. That's all on the western side. Tosfos has some problems with that explanation, and so Tosfos gives a different girsa, which was the other girsa I was just mentioning, that they learned Kir of Shimon Ben Yechoi, which is actually how we have it printed in the Gemara over here, that what it is just the opposite. They changed their mind, or they learned that their Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, actually agreed with Rabbi Shimon Ben Yechoi. Moshu Gavri LeGavra, according to that, would be that Rabbi Shimon Ben Yechoi is called the Gavri because he's mentioned with his name and his father's name. So therefore you have two people, so to speak. Rabbi Shmuel is not mentioned with his father's name. Rabbi Shmuel had a father, of course, but his father was not mentioned in this connection or most other connections. Therefore, he's the Gavra. And what we're saying, according to that, is just the opposite. Rabbi Shimon, the Gavri, who was mentioned with his father's name, was schlepped over, according to that version, schlepped over Rabbi Shmuel to his side, and they held that Rabbi Shmuel agreed with him. Okay. So those are the various opinions. All right. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'oila. No. I mean, the halacha is like our Mishnah, that with the chatoris apnimius, it's Yisod Ma'arovi. With everything else, it's Yisod Jeremi, and that's that. Okay. So the Mishnah says, ha'oila kodshei kadashim. The oila is another korban which is kodesh kadashim. And what's the point of that? Rashi mentioned the point of having to specify that the oila is kodesh kadashim is, it means, first of all, if any part of it is taken outside the azara, it becomes possible. If a tevul yom touches it, it becomes possible. If a mechutzik tipurim touches it, it becomes possible. Me'ila applies to it. Tosfos actually mentions a couple of these things. Tevul yom and mechutzik tipurim really apply to all kodashim. But the key thing is the yotze and the me'ila. Because me'ila doesn't apply to kodshim kalim. Me'ila applies only to the emurim of kodshim kalim, only the fat of them that's going to be burned on the mezbeach. But of course, the news of them is kai of a kohen me'ila. It doesn't apply to the rest of it. Whereas the oila or any other kodshim, it applies to everything.
The chatas,
oila, osham, yash. Yeah. Okay. But that's the point of mentioning that the oila is kodesh kodashim. Shetasa v'asofa, and it has to be shefted on the north side.
Means what it means.
That's what it means. We just said that. That's what it means. If it wasn't kodshei kodshim, then it means if it was taken out of the azara, it wouldn't become possible, and me'ila wouldn't apply to it, and so forth. That's what we mean by stressing that it's kodshei kodashim. And actually, the Gemara is also going to point out why the Mishnah first mentions it over here. Why didn't we mention it by the Parvus Sosha Yonah Kippurim? Why didn't we mention it by the Chatoris Atatonis? We didn't say any of those. We didn't say in the first and second and third Mishnayos. We didn't say Parvus Sosha Yonah Kippurim, Kodshei Kodshim, Shkitasim Vastafin, etc. Why first over here? In Mishnah Dalet are we first mentioning that the Ola is Kodesh Kodashim? We'll deal with that first thing in the Gemara.
All Kodesh Kodashim?
That we'll see in the Gemara. Wait. There's a category of Korbanos called Kodesh Kodashim. The Ola is in that category. But the Karbonis of Yom Kippur are also in that category. And the Par and the Sura and the Surah are also in that category. And the Chathas and the Osham are also in that category. Why first now, when we get to Mishnah Dalet, to the Ola, are we first mentioning the word that the Ola is Kodesh Kadosh? That's the point. Yes. So that's the Gemara is going to deal with that. Okay, Shkitas of Asafin, it's Shechted in the North, Kibbal Dama B'Klisharis Asafin, the receiving of the blood, again, has to be done in a Klisharis on the North side. The Dama Ton Shtema Chanas Shenaba, the blood of it has to be sprinkled two sprinklings, which are four, which means, as we've learned before, and Rashi mentioned based on a Mishnah in Talmud, what it is he goes first to the northeastern corner of the Mizeah, which is this corner over here, and he stands on the ground over there, He stands on the ground and he takes the mizrach and dashes the blood against the mizrach, against the corner, so that some of it goes this way and some of it goes this way. That's one matana, which makes two. And then he goes to the opposite corner, to the southwestern corner, and repeats the same thing. So now some of it goes on the south, some of it goes on the west. And thus you have shtei matanas, he did two applications, shehein ava, where it comes out on all four sides in the mizrach. Then once that's done, the korban ola, the skin is stripped off of it, v'nituach, and then it's cut up into pieces, v'cholin la'ishim, and the whole thing is burnt on the mizrach. Right? That's the ola. Okay, so let's analyze the Mishnah. Ola my time atoni le'kodesh kodashim. Why first by the ola does it mention that it's kodesh kodashim? Why didn't it say that by any of the previous kavanas, which are all in that category? The reason is Mishnah, like sivba lashem kodesh kodashim he, because the ola so far is the only korban of the ones that we've talked about yet, where it didn't actually say on it the word lashem. It doesn't say on it Lashem, or it doesn't say on it Kodshei Kodoshim. It doesn't, the Ola, the Chatos and the Oshem and various other Kobonas are described elsewhere in the Torah as Kodesh Kodoshim. The Ola has never described that in so many words. Nevertheless, it is Kodesh Kodoshim. Even though it's not described as such in the Pasuk, nevertheless, it is Kodesh Kodashim. But that's why we stress that in our Mishnah. Okay. The Dhammaton Shtei Matonis.
Then it's always Kodesh Kodashim, it's Kodesh Kodashim.
No, the point is that our Mishnah has to tell us that because we wouldn't have known it from the Pasuk.
And that means what exactly?
Again, I just told you, Rashi says that it means that Yoyseh, touched by Tzvulyon and Mephusik Yiporim, then it becomes possible, and Mela applies there. As opposed to none of those things, or no, actually Tosfos says some of those things do apply to Kodshim Kalam, but Yoyseh and Mela do not. Okay. Then we said the Dhammato and Shtei Matonis. We said the blood of it has to be applied two times, which are four. Hechi of it. So how do we do it exactly? Omer Rav, Noisin v'choizer v'noisin. So Rav says what it means is that actually it's not like we just said that you do one application which goes to both sides. What you do is you dash from the keli onto the mizbeach on one side of the keren and then on the other side of the keren. So it really does come out, according to Rav, that you have actually four matanis. It's called shtei matanis because in practice, once you look at it afterwards, you only see two splashes of blood on the mizbeach. Or at least it looks like, because they're the two of them that are on each corner merged together. But according to Rav, you're actually doing them as separate splashes. You're doing one over here, for example, and one over here. And the two of them merge together, kind of. And the same thing on the opposite corner. Wait. So that's what Rav says. Shmuel on a matana atas min gamma. Shmuel says you do one matana in the shape of a gamma, which is a Greek letter shaped a right angle, meaning, as we said, that you drew it on one corner and it spreads to the two corners. Okay. The Gemara says ketanoi. This is actually like a machloikas tanoi. A braisa says yoko yizukenu zrika. You would think when it comes to the ola and most other korbanos that maybe you just do one sprinkling on the mizeach. No, tamad by masavi. Therefore, the pasuk says you have to do it around. Well, isaviv yachol yakifenis kachot. Around, maybe it means like a thread. Maybe it means the kohen dips his finger in the blood and starts running it along the side of the mizbeach until he uses it up, and then dips it again and continues so that you have a line of blood running all the way around the mizbeach. No, tamad line with the zorku, but the pasuk says that they should throw it. You can't throw it and have it go all the way around. It's not really possible for you. So that's why it is. Okay, so that's kamin gamma. That means, how do you accomplish that? By doing it like a gamma, by doing it like two right angles. And therefore, that means the dhammaton, shematon, shen abba. So that's what it means. Therefore, what?
No.
So again, if you do that kind of thing on... Where the other paper goes, you guys still have it. If you do that kind of thing on this corner of the mizbeach,
right.
And then you do that kind of thing on this corner of the mizbeach, or actually this one and this
two
one,
right.
Whatever, then you come out, yeah, from two
northeast
right angles,
south,
yeah, northeast and southwest, and therefore it comes out that you have blood on all four sides, yeah. That's one opinion. Rabbi Shmuel says no. Nema kan soviv and nema lahalan soviv. Here it says by the ola that you have to put the blood soviv. Later on by the chatoi that took place during the Milurim, during the first eight days of the dedication of the Mishkan. The Pasuk also says that the blood had to be applied soviv. So Malahalan Pisuk Va'agmachonek. So over there, what does it mean, Sovib? It means you have four separate applications, because that's how it is with a Chatas, as we said in the previous Mishnah. But the Kohen walks around and does one individual application. Pisuk means they're separated. Each one is its own. You don't do one that goes on two sides. You do each corner individually. And then
they're not thrown, right?
Never mind that. The point is, no, well, they're not thrown. In the case of a Chatas, he dips in his finger. But the point is, Afkan Pisuk Va'agmachonek. The same thing by an Ola. Says Rabbi Shmuel, it means that they have to be separate. So that would be like what Rav is saying, that you do one over here and then one over here. So then you're going to argue in that case, if you're going to learn from the Chatas by the Miluim, where it says Saviv, then you should say over there you need four Matonis on the four Kronis, meaning each Keren gets a Matona. Afkan Av Matonis al Abba Kronis. Maybe over here by the Ola it has to be the same kind of thing also. On Marcha, so you say, no, it's not like that, because the difference is, Ola Tu'uni Yisoy. The difference is, with an Ola, the blood has to end up on the Yisoy of the Mizbeach. The blood has to be placed on a part of the Mizbeach, the blood has to be placed on a part of the Mizbeach where there is a Yisoy underneath it, which we learned earlier, we learned a couple of blocks ago, we talked over there about the 10 Yisoy L'Ola Shom Mizbeach, and we talked about a Kabbal Chomer over there. Take this, I guess, because, yeah. So that's how we learned, therefore, that the Ola, the blood of the Ola, has to be placed over a part of the Mizbeach that has the Yisoy. And the Keren, Mizrachas Dromis, Lahayolah Yisoy, the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach did not have a Yisoy. Now, therefore, in other words, so if you were going to say that you have to be like a chatas individually on each corner, that wouldn't work, because you have three out of the four corners have Yisoy, but one does not. So obviously, therefore, the Pasuk must be implying, says Rabbi Shmuel, that the and Rav following him, that what you do is you do it only on opposite corners. You do it on this corner and you do it on this corner. But only you pick for that purpose the corners which both the opposite corners which both have a Yisoy. So therefore, that's why Dafka has to be the southeast, and Dafka has to be the northeast and the southwest. Because if you did the northwest and the southeast, then you'd have one without any Yisoy. Exactly. Right. As opposed to the Chafas, there's no such issue. There's no special thing that says that the Chafas has anything to do with the Yisoy until you come to the Shiraim anyway. Therefore, you can put it on all four corners and not have a problem with that.
So according to this version, since you have four by four, then you have
to... So according to this version, you do need four matonis when it comes to the oila. But unlike the chatas, where each matonis is done on a separate corner, here you have the two matonis. Each of the four matonis is done only two corners actually get blood. All four sides of the mizbeach end up having blood on them. But you only do it on this corner and you only do it on this corner. The difference is, again, Rabbi Shmuel and Rab following him are saying you do one here and one here and one here and one here. Whereas Shmuel and the Tanakhama of the Brice are saying you do like this towards the corner, one dashing, one sprinkling towards the corner, and it goes on both sides.
It amounts to the same, but...
It doesn't amount to the same. Well, it amounts to the blood is in the same places, but it's not done in the same way, right? The Rambam Paskins, again, like our Stam Mishnah, that Shtei Matronis Shtei Nabra, which means that it's actually two applications, which means also that he's passing like Shmuel. Now, usually, we have the usual rule is in Hilchot Iftar Beheter, outside of Dinim Omen, it's usually the Halacha is like Rab against Shmuel. Why is it like Shmuel over here? So one thing is the noted. First of all, I mean, I guess you could answer because we have a Braisa where we have a Tanakhama against Rabbi Shmuel. But second of all, the noted Yehuda actually in Flach on Stockin points out another reason. Not necessarily do these rules about the halacha being like a Rav in certain cases and like Shmuel in other cases. Not necessarily do those rules apply to things that are ultimately Hilchos of Meshicha. Things where again, where the halacha is not relevant. Nowadays, because we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, it's only going to be relevant again, Limos HaMashiach. It's only going to be applicable, Limos HaMashiach, not necessarily to the usual rules hold in regard to such things.
Therefore,
so therefore, the Rambam may well pass in like Shmuel, even though it's a matter of Easter Beheter and not Dinim Omen. That's the Hilchos of HaMashiach.
Shmuel will not pick it like him.
Well, in other words, well, that's another matter, but the point is that the Rambam is still entitled to pass in like Shmuel in a case that's not applicable anyway until Mashiach. That's what it is, because Hilchos of HaMashiach is different. Because it's not something that is applicable until Mashiach comes. So therefore, the usual rules of Sak Halacha don't necessarily apply to that, says the Nodi Bihut. Okay. Fine. Now, my time. And now, why is that? Why, indeed, did the southeastern corner of the Mizrach not have Yisod? And by the way, there are a few different understandings among the Rishonim how that was. Now, you have over here in Rashi, you have a diagram, which is one where there's different ways within understanding what Rashi himself is saying. So the diagram that we have in front of us here is one way of understanding this diagram at the bottom of the Gemara. There, yeah. Is one way of understanding what Rashi is saying, that again, the Yisod went completely along the west side, completely along the north side. It turned the corner towards the southern side and went down an Amma and then stopped. It turned the corner onto the eastern side and went one Amma and stopped. All that is one way of explaining it. Another way of explaining it,
is there any connection with the distribution of the Shvatim?
Yes, we're going to talk about that in a second. That's why it says Binyamin and Yehuda. Wait, we're going to learn about that in the next line. But, yeah. So that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is it went along the northern side and along the western side, but then it didn't actually turn the corner. It stuck out one Amma past the wall of the Mizbeach, so that if you were standing on the southern side of the Mizbeach, you would see there's one Amma sticking out over there, but it's not actually on the southern side of the Mizbeach, per se, so it doesn't wrap around the corner. Like in this diagram, it just extends out from the corner, further towards the south, but not actually wrapping around to the southern side. And the same thing with the other corner. That's another way of understanding.
It's one.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Good. One way of understanding it is like the diagram. So, okay, one way of understanding it is that the Yisod went like this.
Yeah.
It went around the entire, it went along the entire northern side,
right,
along the entire western side. It stuck out one Amma towards the east. It didn't actually wrap around.
Ah.
It stuck out towards the east.
Ah.
Like stuck out towards the south, same thing. That's one way of understanding it. The second way of understanding it is the way that we have the diagram in Rashi in front of us, which is that it wrapped around one Amma towards the south and towards the east. A third way of understanding it, which is how the Rambam seems to understand it, is that it went around almost the whole east side and almost the whole southern side. It just didn't go all the way to the corner. It stopped just before the corner. So those are three ways of understanding. Be that as it may, the question is, why should that be so? Why was there no Yisod? My time. Omer of Allah's official host of Chelko Shel Torah. The reason is because that area, whatever area it was, according to these various opinions, that didn't have Yisod, was not in the portion of the Torah. The Torah means Binyamin, because Binyamin is compared in Yaakov's Rach, but Binyamin's the Avius Rach. Binyamin is like a wolf who devours. Torah. So therefore, the Mizbeach had to completely be in the portion of Binyamin. Therefore, since a part of the area where the Mizbeach would have been, where there would have been Yisod, was assigned to the territory of Yehuda, therefore there could not be Yisod. The Amr of Shmuel bar of Yitzchak, the Amr of Shmuel bar of that's the east and south, right? So either the whole east and the whole south, or most of it, or whatever, belong there. The Amr of Shmuel bar of Yitzchak, Mizbeach oichol b'chelka sh'yehuda Amr. As we find, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak says, the Mizbeach consumed an Amma in the portion of Yehuda, meaning really what we mean is, in other words, that this one Amma of the Yisod that sticks out into the territory of Yehuda, basically.
Where's the limit between Yehuda?
That's what we're saying. It runs along the side of the Mizbeach. It runs, if you say that the Mizbeach is configured like this, then it means that the border of Yehuda basically runs along here.
Show me.
If you say like this diagram, then it means the border of Yehuda runs along here.
So this is Yehuda?
So this is Yehuda and this is Binyamin, yeah. If you say it's like this, then it means that the border of Yehuda runs also more or less the same thing, but it means that again, the Mizbeach just sticks in one Amma into Yehuda's portion.
So this would stop.
So then to go again, it would be about the same thing. It would go from here, it would run along here approximately.
And this would be Yehuda.
And if according to the third one, it means that Yehuda's territory goes like this, basically. That Yehuda's territory touches the Mizbeach on that corner. Therefore, that corner couldn't have a Yisod. The whole idea is that the Mizbeach had to be Davka in the portion of Binyamin. So there's a lot of... Why is that? There's a lot of different ideas. First of all, there's the idea that Rashi starts out with the idea that when Binyamin is compared to a wolf in Yaakov's bracha, Binyamin's Eviatra, it refers to the fact that the Mizbeach, which eats up the Korbanos, is going to be in his territory. Therefore, it has to be in his territory. And in fact, you have the famous thing at the end of Sukkah, you have Miriam Bat Bilga kicking the Mizbeach and saying to it that you're a wolf, lookus, you're a wolf that devours the Korbanos and aren't sticking up for the Jewish people. So yeah, there is that. because like a wolf, they eat stuffed animals. But that's the point, in other words.
The Nyamin?
Not the Nyamin himself, but the Mizbeach that was built in his fort.
No, I understand.
What?
He was called the Turek.
He's called, yeah, but that's,
why?
But that's the idea, because he represents the ability to be able to grab things from Klippus, from the world, and bring them into Kedusha. In fact, there's a number of Maimarim of Siddhas about that, particularly from the Rebbe Maharash, that talk about this idea that Shabbos is also compared to a Turek, because Turek is the fun of a Lachrav. It grabs some of Friday, becomes Shabbos, and part of some of Sunday, not the Shabbos, becomes Shabbos. None of the other Shvatim had that power to the extent that Binyamin did, and therefore, so there's also an idea that's brought in one of these Maimarim. We know there's a Pachnis Tulsus, the 288 sparks of Kedusha. Teres is Gematria 289. So it represents the ability to go beyond the 288 and be able to elevate them. Yes.
He's
called the Teres. Binyamin's the Avius Ruf. So therefore, in all Gemara, he's called the Teres. Yes. He also didn't participate in the selling of Yosef. And actually, there's an interesting thing that's brought in that regard, that's brought from the Zohar, that says like this. The Mizbeach had a go. The sides of the Mizbeach that were able to have Yisod are the sides associated with the Shevatim who were not so, who were on Yosef's side, basically, who weren't so much against it. So what do we have? If you think about the directions in which the Jewish people camped, in which the Shvatim camped in the Midbar, you had, on the south side, you had Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. They were all, at least Reuven and Shimon, were among the ones. So actually, one second. So let me say it like this. Okay, so starting with then, again, on the northern side, you had Yisod on the whole side. Who's on the northern side? Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Fine, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali are all children of Bilhah and Zilpah. We find originally in the Pesukim, but who now are B'nai Bilhah, B'nai Zilpah. So fine, when it came to selling Yosef, they all got involved and they also joined in it. But they weren't originally so terribly opposed to Yosef. They were more on his side. Therefore, they can have Yosef on their side. Who camped on the western side in the Midbar? You had Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin. Well, Ephraim and Menashe are Yosef's own sons. Binyamin wasn't involved in selling Yosef, therefore that whole side can have Yosef. Who camped on the eastern side? You had Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. Of them, Yehuda at least did something in order to save Yosef, because he's the one who advised to sell him. Therefore, he deserves that a tiny bit of the Yisod can be in his portion, but no more than that. And who camped on the southern side? Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. Again, which one of those three did something to try and save Yosef? Reuven, by Yishmai Reuven, by Ephraim and Yadav. So therefore, again, he deserves for that little bit that he did to try to help. Well, Shimon was one of the ones. Shimon and Levi together were the ones who had the idea to throw him in the pit, to kill him, and not throw him in the pit, whatever. Kill him. Fine. Levi didn't camp on any side of the Mishkan. Levi is a separate thing. In other words, when we're associating the sides over here with the sides of the Mishkan on which the Shvatim camp. So Levi camps all around. Yeah. Okay. All right. Onward.
But they participated.
Fine, they participated, but we're talking, but they're not relevant to this that we're talking about who camps on what side of the Mishkan, because they camped on all sides of the Mishkan. That's, yeah. Okay.
Understand
fine,
that.
So then that's a different matter. But within the other 12 Shvatim, this is how it works. Nobody. Levi didn't send the miracle. Okay.
He did not. Why?
Because they weren't gonna inherit territory in Eretz Yisrael anyway. All they were gonna have was army.
Okay. Not because they didn't
oppose. Well, maybe also because they opposed it. I don't know. Okay, onward. Let's go on. A strip of land stuck out from Yehuda's territory that went into Binyamin's territory. So again, you have different ways of explaining that. Does it mean just that? So actually, I may have drawn it a little bit wrong over here. Does it mean, in other words, that Yehuda's territory went basically like this? Or it ran... So, in other words, it stuck out. I'll redraw it more clearly. If we say that the Yisod was like this, for example, then one way of understanding this with Suah HaYosef and Machal Kesh Yehuda is Yehuda's border is going like this. It skirts the edge of the Yisod over there. It skirts the edge of the Yisod. Then it goes up one amma and continues along the side of the Mizbeach, and then continues from there. So that's one amma that sticks out over there more than it did elsewhere. Right. Another possibility is it may also mean that there was a strip of land of Yehuda that stuck out on this side, on the southern side of the Mizbeach as well, such that a Yisod couldn't be built on that side over here. But there may have been also Yehuda's territory may have also included this area over here. Ahoya V'nichnas v'chal v'shamin yomim, it went into your... Well, there's two different ways of explaining what the Gemara means. V'hoya v'nyomim atzadik mitzayr alel v'chol yom l'noitla. V'nyomim atzadik was pained by that every day, and he wanted to be able to take that over. But he can't, because there's borders of the Shvatim that... pained by the fact that this territory shouldn't be part of his Shevet territory, and therefore that the Mizbeah has to be built the way that it is without a complete.
He had 99% of it. What were you complaining?
But he wanted that thing.
He
wanted it to be Shenemar, as a positive. It's a good thing to be jealous of that thing that's Shusha. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Choyfeth Olav Kolayon. The Pasuk says, when Moshe gives his brach, the shade of Binyamin, he says that Binyamin Choyfeth Olav Kolayon. Literally, the simple meaning is it means that Hashem, that Hashem rests over him constantly. But Choyfeth also, Choyfeth, Rashi explains, can also mean like when a person rubs his hair or rubs it or scratches himself or whatever out of like he's bothered by something, he's pained by something. So Choyfef Olav Kolayim means the positive begins, Yedid Hashem Yishken Lavet HaKolav, Binyamin is a friend of Hashem, who Hashem always dwells securely over him. Choyfef Olav Kolayim, but Binyamin is bothered and is constantly itching himself and whatever over the fact that he's talking, there's this one Amma of Yehuda's territory which sticks out into mine and prevents the Mizbeach from being made in its complete configuration with the Yisod. Lefichach, therefore, Zacha Binyamin Asadik, therefore, because of that, Binyamin Asadik was Zacha, Benasa Ushpizcha Makarish Baruch Hu, he became the host of Hashem, meaning that the Kodesh Kadoshim was built in his portion. Shenema, as that Pasuk finishes, Urein Kseif of Shachin, that Hashem rests between his shoulders, meaning the Kodesh Kadoshim. Because we'll see on Amun Beis, we'll talk about why the Kodesh Kadoshim can be described as between his shoulders. But that's, again, that's in the Bracha of Binyamin. So we see from that because that's the connection. Because Binyamin was Choyfef Olav, therefore, Uvein Kseif HaShof, and therefore you got...
Good name.
Yeah. So now, Marashof points out a number of things about this. First of all, you have a machloket in a few places in chat, whether Yerushalayim was b'chlal divided among the Shvatim. If not, then if it wasn't divided among the Shvatim, then this whole discussion doesn't really come into play anyway, because there was no border between Yehuda and Binyamin that ran through Yerushalayim. But also, Marsha deals with the question that if you're saying over here that Binyamin was Zoicha because of this, that he's going to have the Kodesh Kodashim in his portion, if the idea is he knew obviously that a major portion of this message is going to be in his portion, and therefore he's bothered by this one Amma that's prevented from building the Mizbeach. In that portion. So he knows already the Kodesh HaKadoshim is going to be in his portion. What do you mean? Because of that, he was Zoicha. That it should be in his portion. But it means, in other words, he knew before that it was going to be. So Marsha explains that our Gemara, the Gemara in Tosa mentions another reason why Binyamin was Zoicha for that, because they were the first, the Gemara mentions that there are two different opinions, who were the first ones to jump into the Amsa. Was it Nachshon and Aminadab from Shevet Yehuda, or was it Shevet Binyamin? Or Gemara may be going according to the opinion that it was Shevet Binyamin. So therefore, he already has this quote, Nasa Rishbiz from my Kodesh Baruch Hu. And then, now that he knew, because of that he's going to have the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the major portion of this message, and his portion, he was bothered, why is there this one Abba that's outside of my portion, which ends up in Yehuda's portion, and therefore the Mizbeach can't be complete.
And still, with all that schools, he wasn't able to obtain that the Shevet Binyamin was serving in the Beit HaMikdash.
What does one have to do with the other? Okay. What does one have to do with the other? He's bothered by that, but still, the avodah was given the shade of faith. Okay. There's other explanations also, including one idea that a couple of the mafreshim bring is we're not talking We're talking, again, another explanation is we're not just talking about the Beit HaMikdash over here. We're also talking about Mishkan Shiloh. We're also talking about the Mishkan of Gilgal and Noiv and Given. As we're going to learn in the last paragraph, all of them were in Binyamin's territory. So eventually, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was built in his territory, but even the other ones, Shiloh, but we'll learn later on in the Masechta that again there was a strip of land that stuck out from Yemen's territory where Shiloh was located. Okay, fine. So anyway, so that's what we mean when we say why was the Mizbeach built in such a way that it was not a Yisod on that one corner, because that territory belonged to Yehuda, and we're saying Binyamin would have liked to have it be part of his territory, but that's not how it was, but therefore Binyamin had this thought that the Gemara actually in Yuma explains there were parts of the Beit HaMikdash that were built, that had to be built in the territory of Yehuda. In particular, we'll talk on Amud Beis, the place where the Sanhedrin sat, the Lishkas HaGodes, had to be in the territory of Yehuda. But the Mizbeach and the Mizbeach of the Heichel, including the Kodesh HaKadoshim, were all in the territory of Binyamin.
At the times of Mashiach, we were all these times to Shvatim.
Yeah. Yeah, so then actually in the time of the third Beis Hamikdash, actually the way Yechezkel will describe the division of Eretz Yisrael at that point, you're not going to have, your Shalayim and the Beis Hamikdash are not going to be in the territory of any Shevet. You're going to have, there's going to be a strip of land in the middle of the country that goes to the Nasi, either Mashiach or the Kohen Gadol, different opinions, and the Nasi sets aside a square in the middle of it, which is there's a space in it for the Beis Hamikdash and for the city and places for the Kohenim and Levim to live and so forth.
Where are the Gerim going to be?
The Gerim, it says over there that they'll live with the Shevet that they live, that in, among whom they live during the time of Golos. But okay, that's another matter. Alright.
And they'll be part of that Shevet?
And not part of that Shevet necessarily, but they'll live, or at least according to the Sifri, they'll be buried together with that Shevet. Alright, that's a separate matter. Alright. Mason. The Gemara says, okay, I have a contradiction to this idea. You're telling me that there was no Yisoid, on the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach. But we learn in the next paragraph, how did they perform the avodah of the Oilas Ha'oif? He would do the liquor on the back of the neck of the bird, putting his fingernail through the back of the neck of the bird, umavdil, and he would physically divide the head from the body, so that they'd be two separate pieces now. And then he would squeeze out, he would press out the blood of it onto the wall of the Mizbeach. And all of that took place, on the southeastern corner, as we'll learn in the next page. So the question is, the southeastern corner, the same corner that was saying had no Yisoid.
Right.
The E Amrit like Havala Yisoid. So if you're telling me there was no Yisoid on that corner, Babu Baal Mahudukovid, then where does it come out? When he's squeezing out the blood over there, it just goes onto the floor. On the face of it, why should it? It should be going onto some part of the Mizbeach. Now, Rashi asks the question, the Olos Sa'oi, the avoid of it, the mystery of it is done on the top half of the Mizbeach, so what's the problem? It'll go onto the Sa'oi, the ledge over there that the Kohen stands on. The answer is, Rashi says, because the halacha is, the Kohen can in fact do it below the Sovev as well. As long as he does it above the Chutah Sikra, which is one arm below the Sovev, he's entitled to, if he wants, he can be standing on the Sovev, reach down and do it below, and do it up to one arm below where he's standing, up down to the Chutah Sikra. So then you have the question that the blood is just going to end up going onto the floor and going away. How is that? So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, because you can say as follows, they made the condition as follows, Avira Dibin Yomim Kalkad Yehuda. What they said is as follows, that area which belongs to the territory of Yehuda, the airspace above a certain distance does belong to Binyamin. Therefore,
what was the question?
The question was, again, if the Kohen is doing the Olas Ha'oif on this corner of the Mizbeach, where there's no Yisoid beneath it, then the blood is just trickling down onto the floor, and what's the point of that? So the answer is, they made a deal as follows. When it comes to the areas that were saying, the area where Yehuda had his territory sticking out into the area where the Mizbeach should have been, the floor, the ground, belongs to Yehuda. But the airspace above that belongs to Binyamin. Therefore, what does that mean? So Rashi says, therefore, what they would do is as follows. What they did is that on that corner, so you didn't have a regular Yisoid on the southeastern corner, the walls of the Mizbeach just went straight down to the ground. However, what they did is they added to that corner a little thing sticking out from the corner over there, a little ledge sticking out from the corner over there just for that purpose, so that the blood of the Olas Ha'oif will go onto that and not just onto the floor. So it's not a real Yisoid, because Yisoid implies that it's attached to the ground. However, it prevents the. It means, therefore, that the blood is actually staying on the Mizbeach rather than just trickling onto the floor.
Yehuda must be very happy about that.
I don't know. Fine. Okay. Tosfos discusses that at some length, all the pros and cons of that. You have a long Tosfos that discusses over here. That the question may not even be about so much where the blood is going. The question is the malika itself is supposed to be on the top of the Mizbeach. If you're doing it on over an area that belongs to Yehuda, then it doesn't belong to the Mizbeach. The answer is the airspace belongs to Binyamin, therefore it is considered part of the Mizbeach. So when you're standing over there, the southeast corner, the airspace next to that southeast corner is still considered to belong to Binyamin. Only the ground underneath it is not.
So in other words,
when you're coming to
airspace from the top of the Mizbeach extends.
In other words, you have like this. Here's the floor that belongs to Yehuda.
Right.
Then you have from that corner, there go up the two walls of the Mizbeach. The airspace next to those two walls belongs to Binyamin. So there's
right.
and, whatever. I guess an ammo, but it doesn't matter. Whatever. The point is that therefore, when he's standing over there, next to the Mizbeach, when he's standing on the Sozer, whatever, and doing that, he's still in territory that belongs to Sheva Binyamin, and therefore it can be considered that it went on the Mizbeach. So according to Tosfos, then it comes out you didn't really need this extra ledge over there. And in fact, the Rambam apparently holds the same way also, because the Rambam didn't bring any such concept of an extra ledge over there. Fine. My lo have a lo yisoid. Okay, so Avira Binyamin, Kauka Yehuda. So the air belonged to Binyamin, but the floor belonged to Yehuda. That's why they couldn't build a yisoid over there. My lo have a lo yisoid. Now, in all this discussion, what do we mean that there was no yisoid there on that corner or on those sides? Rav Amar Binyan, Rav says that it means literally there was no yisoid over there. They actually built it like that. They built the yisoid as a ledge that sticks out on this side and on this side, and it wraps around or it doesn't wrap around or whatever. But then it stops, and then you have empty spacing. Levi Amar Bedomi. Levi says no. Physically, there was a yisoid around all four sides. What we mean when we say there was a yisoid only on two sides and parts of two other sides, what we mean is those were the only places where you could put blood. You were not allowed to ever place blood. There was a physical yisoid, according to Levi, going around the whole southern side and around the whole eastern side, but you weren't allowed to place blood on those parts. The only part that's considered yisoid for the purpose of placing blood is the parts that are in Binyamin's territory.
North and west.
And that little part that sticks out to the south and to the east. Okay. Rav Matagin, because it's like this. Rav translates the pasuk as follows. Again, the pasuk that we said Binyamin Zayid Yisrael. Rav translates it Bachsante Yisbnei Mabcha. In his territory, the Mizbeach will be built. So therefore, according to him, means the actual building all has to be in Binyamin's territory. Therefore, there can't be any part of the physical building of the Mizbeach that is in Yehuda's territory. Therefore, you have to have that. You have to have those parts are missing. The Levi Matagin Bachsante Yisbnei Mabcha. Whereas Levi translates the pasuk, the Mizbeach shall be built in his portion. So therefore, in other words, not the Mizbeach, the Mikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, shall be built in his portion. So in other words, according to Levi, fine, the Beis HaMikdash as a whole, most of it is in Binyamin's portion. If you have a little bit of it, is built in, the same way as you have parts of it, such as the Lushkas HaGazis, are in Yehuda's portion. No big deal. So by the same point, there could have been physical Yisoid built sticking out into Yehuda's portion. It's just not considered to have the halachas of the Yisoid. So therefore he says, Makdash HaMakim Mekodesh L'damim. Therefore what he says is, in other words, the point is, what do we mean by Makdash or not Beis Makdash? What we mean is the place that is holy as far as that you can put blood there. For physical Yisoid, there could be there. But that part is not holy as far as putting blood there. For that, you need to ask for the portions that were built in Binyamin's territory. So that's the point of the Machlokes between Rav and Leib. Okay. Toshna, come, let's prove from a Mishnah in Midrash, which describes how it was. Was the Yisoid physically built around all four sides, but just only two sides of it had the Kedusha of the Yisoid? Or was it physically only built around two sides, like an L? Which opinion, yeah. So the Mishnah in Midrash describes how Yisoid, how Yimahalach, Alpnei Kalatsopin, Valpnei Kalamayra, the Yisoid went all along the northern side and all along the western side, Oichol Badorim Ama'achas, or Mizrach Ama'achas, and it consumed one Amma in the south and one Amma in the east. Meaning, and again, according to the various explanations, it means either that it only stuck out, or that it wrapped around, or that it wrapped around almost to the end. But whatever the point is, it clearly says that it only did that. So that would be like Rav, not like Levi. The answer is no. My Ochol Nami Bedomim. No, Levi would say what the Mishnah means is physically it was located on all four sides, but as far as Domim, it was considered to be only on those two sides. When we say Ochol, the part of it that can be used for Domim consumes one Amma in the south and one Amma in the east, because more than that, you're not allowed to put blood on any of those sides. Toshma, come, let's prove from the Mishnah. The Mishnah also describes over there. The Mishnah starts off describing that the Mizbeach was 32 by 32 Amma, implying that it was a perfect square. So according to Levi, that's good, it was a perfect square. According to Rav, it's not a perfect square, because the Yisoid sticking out on two sides and not on two other sides. The answer is, Hachav Maya Skin, and then Rav would answer that what the Mishnah means over there, we're not talking about it was a full square of 32 by 32. What we mean is, on some sides, it was 32. the longest length or the longest width of the Mizbeach was 32. If you measured along the northern wall, you would get 32 amas, because you have, as it sticks out, one ama on each side. If you measure along the western wall, same thing. Yeah, if you measure along the northern wall, or you measure along the eastern wall, you only have 31. But the Mishnah just means that the maximum extent of the Mizbeach number is 32. Okay. Tashma, come, let's prove from another Mishnah that
it was a rectangle.
So it wasn't a rectangle, then it was a square with protrusions sticking out from the corners of it. Okay, fine. Tashma, come, we'll prove from something in the next parak. Nimta pereach ama al yisoid ama al soid. In the next parak, when we deal with the details of the construction of the Mishkan, we say over there that the kevesh overhung one arm of kevesh, which was on the southern side of the Mizbeach, overhung one arm over the Yisod and one arm over the Soviv. Because again, if you have the Mizbeach, again, was built, it had insets. You started with the Yisod, which was the widest, then you had an inset to the Yisod, you had another inset to the Soviv, and then it goes up from there. The Kevesh, which is on the southern side of the Mizbeach, hung over those protrusions, like
right.
you can see over here.
Right.
So the implication is, in other words, that there was actually a Yisod there, otherwise what do you mean? The Kevesh overhung the Yisod. The answer is Emma Kneged Am Yisod. If there's no Yisod on the southern side, then there's no Yisod for the Kevesh overhang. But the Nimsa Pereach Am Al Yisod implies that the Kevesh was hanging above the Yisod. In other words, what it is like this. Again, you have the wall of the Mizbeach went like this.
Yeah.
So the wall of the Kevesh went like this to compensate. The wall of the Kevesh closest to the Mizbeach went like this in order to compensate.
What?
To come for that, because otherwise you would have, if the wall of the Kevesh closest to the Mizbeach went straight up, then you'd have a two arm gap between the top of the Kevesh and the top of the Mizbeach. In order to minimize that gap, what they had is therefore, if you look at the Kevesh from the side, in other words, it was built like this. So that you have, therefore, so now when you're building it next to the Mizbeach, then it comes out, the top of it comes out close to the top of the Mizbeach, like that.
Show me a second.
In other words, if the Kevesh had been built like this.
Built straight,
then you would have a problem. You'd have a big gap over here between the end of the Kevesh and the beginning of the Mizbeach. So to minimize that, they built the edge of the Kevesh closest to the Mizbeach on an angle.
So
the point is it overhung the Amma of the Yisod and the Amma of the Soviet. So if there was a Yisod on there, like Levi says, then that makes sense. If there's no Yisod there, what is there for it to overhang? So that's a contradiction to that. The answer is, Rav would answer, Ema Kineged Ami Yisod Val Ami Yisod. Right, but what we mean is, it overhung the space where the Yisod would have been had there been a Yisod there, and it overhung the actual Ami of the Yisod, so the Yisod did go completely around the Mizbeach.
But according to Rav, it was still the right angle.
According to Rav, in other words, we would have to draw the diagram a little bit differently. We would draw it that the Kevesh was like this. That you just had, in other words, there was no Ami Yisod there. The only inset was the Soviv. But there would have been here, theoretically, there would have been Yisod over there, and the Kevesh overhung that place. Okay. Fine. Tashma, come, we'll try to bring another proof to Tommy Levi, because Levi himself taught on a Braisa. Kate said, Boninus on Mizbeach, how did they actually build the Mizbeach? Like this, Mavian Malbin Shu Shloshim Ushtayim or Shloshim Ushtayim. They started by taking a square frame, Malbin means, in modern Hebrew, Malbin means a rectangle, but over here it means square. So,
not a rock.
They took a wooden frame out of four long pieces of wood, each one 32 amas long. They nailed these four pieces together, or otherwise axed them together. So you have a big, gigantic frame, 32 by 32, where the empty space in the middle of it is 32 by 32 amas.
In terms of feet,
that would be about 50 feet. Well, it depends who you ask. According to Rav Ram Chaim, no, it's about 50 feet. According to the Chazon Ish, it's 60-something, like 64 feet or something.
Wow.
Fine. Okay, so they make such a frame, 32 by 32 amas. The goybe amas, the frame is one amas tall, and they put it on the floor over there, or maybe chalukei avonim mefulamis, then girlis ben kanis. Then they bring smooth stones, mefulamis, which means moist. Why do they have to be moist? It's because, we'll say later, they have to have been stones that weren't touched by iron. Where are you going to find stones that you can guarantee weren't touched by iron? One possibility is you find them at the bottom of the seabed or something. So therefore, when you bring them, they're going to be wet. So you have again smooth stones that are wet. Fine. The point still remains that they were wet, and the point is that they were wet in the sense that they were obviously never used. They weren't on dry land. Okay. Ben Jolus, Ben Canis, whether big or small, or maybe Sid Vicunya Vazeta. Then they bring a mixture of Sid, which is lime, and Kunya, which is Rashi says molten. We've seen the word Kunya before. Rashi explains that it means molten lead. Molten lead, Rashi says. They use it as part of mixture. Together with the lime. Lime, not lime as in lemon lime, but lime as in what they use for mortar and buildings.
Right.
Yes, that's it. Vicunya and molten lead. Tosfos actually in some other place in the chat discusses the possibility that Kunya may not be lead. It may be some kind of glazing. It may be something else. Whatever. Anyway, some kind of material. Vizepes and also tar. What they do is they mix that together to make sort of like a concrete. They melt all that together and they pour that into this frame. So now, once
into the wooden frame,
inside the wooden frame. So it's like nowadays when they pour concrete. So that way, eventually, once the mixture dries, you take away the frame and now you have a block 32 by 32 by 1 ounce.
Is it?
Okay. All right. Could be. Okay. The Zehu Mokim Yisoid. Now, thereby, you've made the place of the Yisoid, which is 32 by 32. Then the Chozer may be Malvin to Shloshim Amah, Shloshim Amah, Gavir Chomish Amos. Then they bring another frame, which is 30 by 30 Amos and 5 Amos tall. Or maybe Chaloki Avonim Gunner. Again, they bring the smooth stones and the rest of that mixture, and they pour it into that. And then, thereby, they get the Sozin. That does, so there's the first part, again, 32 by 32 got me the Yisoid. The Yisoid is 1 Amos tall. The second part is meant to give you the part up until the level of the soil. So that's 5 amas.
3.
You have 1, 5, and 3, and then you have the crux.
1, show me.
One for the height of the soil.
Right.
5 for the height from there to the soil.
Right.
And then 3 from there to the height of the top of the frame. So now, the second frame was narrower, because it's 30 by 30.
Nine on the height.
The home is there for 10 amas tall, including the crux.
With
the crux, right. Okay. So you had the first frame was 32 by 32 by 1. That brought you to the level of the top of the Yisoid. The second frame is narrower, 30 by 30, but it's much taller. It's 5 amas tall, because that makes the height of the wall in the back up till the surface. And the Chozer or maybe Malvin Shul Chokhet Amas Chogreve Gimel Amas. Then you have a third frame, which is 28 by 28 amas and 3 amas tall. Maybe chalukah the goyim kula, and you bring again the mixture of stones and plaster and whatnot, and pour it into that. And when that dries, u'makom ha'marocha. Now you have the space where the marocha, where the wood pile and the fire on top of the mizbeach is going to be. That brings you to the top. That brings you to the top surface of the mizbeach. So again, it gets narrower as it goes higher. We'll learn a little bit about it in Menachos, that in some parts of the Mizbeach were measured in different size amas. Some of them were measured with amas of 6 tochim, some of them with amas of 5 tochim. So actually, when we say, because that's how it is, we'll learn from Sukkim over there, but the point is, therefore, when we say over here 30 amas and 28 amas, we don't mean exactly 30, we don't mean exactly 28. It's actually, in the case of the 30, it's actually, I think, 30 and 2 amas, and in the case of the 28, it's 28 and 4 amas. What we mean, in other words, whatever. 28 and 4 tefachim, I mean, and 30 and 2 tefachim, whatever. Okay. Anyway.
What do you know that?
We know that from Gemara in Menachos. We'll get to it later this year, Be'ez Hashem.
That
there were different size amas. Yeah. Okay. The Chozer or maybe Malbet Shu Amal Amah. Then they bring another. Then they have another frame, which is an Amma by an Amma and an Amma tall. Or maybe Chalukia Avonim of Cholomus and Gilus and Kanis. Maybe Sid Vakunya. Maybe Zephas Vakunya. Or Mamacha Vashreifa. You melt it all and you pour it all in. Vizel Keren, and that's what you have. By that you have the Keren which sticks up from the top of the Mizbeach. One by one by one. Vechem Chol Keren Vekeren, and so it is with each other corner. So the point is, in other words, the point of bringing this whole long bright is we started by mentioning that you have the first frame is 32 by 32 amos. That seems to imply a perfect square. So that would be like Levi, that was actually built with your third sticking out on all four sides. According to Rav, it wasn't a square. The Chitema, so you're going to answer, okay, Rav would say maybe to begin with, they poured the concrete mixture as a 32 by 32 square, and then afterwards the dye is laid. So maybe afterwards they cut some of it off.
Right.
After it dried, they broke away some part of it. Can't. Abonim Shlemis, because the Pasuk says the Mizeach has to be built out of whole stones. So the meaning, in other words, the Mizeach has to be smooth. It can't be that you have notches in it. In fact, it has to be smooth. It has to be as smooth as a shchita knife that a fingernail wouldn't catch in it. You can't...
Hold on. This whole mixture that we make it with...
Yeah.
The surface?
Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, maybe afterwards. No. Yeah, plaster. And that's what we said. Plaster. Rubber. Then. I mean, plaster. What do you say? Plaster. Lead and tar. And that makes for a fairly smooth mixture.
Is it very strong?
No, I guess it was. I guess it was strong enough. Oh, okay. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, the point is, if you were to break away part of the yisod after you built it, it wouldn't be perfectly smooth.
Right.
So it can't be.
That's the meaning.
Yeah. So the answer is, Rav would explain, demachis midi v'chusei v'shokale. Rav would explain like this. What you do is, when you first put up that first frame to pour the mixture for the yisod, what you do is, you put in to the spaces where there's not supposed to be yisod, you put something in, you put a long piece of wood in that fills up that space and prevents the concrete mixture from going into there. So in other words, to begin with, when they built their frame, but they also built within it, they built a piece like this, the negative image of the yisod, which was filled in, and that way when they pour in the concrete mixture, it only comes out like this. Yeah. And you have to say that because the Ilay Temahachi, if you're not going to explain it that way, what about Hod Amar of Kahana? What about this that we find that Rav Kahana says, Avonim Shal Kronis Chalulis for you, the stones that made up the Kronis, the four corners of the Mizbeach, were hollow. Yechsev, as we have a pasuk, Umolu Kamizra Kazavius Mizbeach, they will be full of the goodness of Hashem, like a Mizra, which is full of blood, like the corners of the Mizbeach, are also full of blood, which is what Rashi, which we mentioned yesterday, that Rashi says that the point of them being hollow was so that when you put the blood of the Chatas on them, it goes into the corner and eventually drains down into the base of the Mizbeach. The point is, here also the corners also have to be perfectly smooth. They also have to be part of Avonim Shlemus. So how would you get them hollow if you made them first as solid blocks and then cut out from them? Obviously the answer is, when you pour in the concrete for the Kronos, to begin with also you put in a piece of wood or something to prevent the mixture from going into where it's not supposed to go. The same thing when it comes to the Yisod, you could explain it the same way. Now, even Levi is going to have to agree with the Kronos, they had to do something to make them hollow. They had to put in something in order to prevent the mixture from forming a solid block one by one. We would say, according to Rav like this, even Levi has to agree that the Kronos were made that way. By using, when you got the frame ready, you put something inside the frame to keep the concrete mixture from making one solid block.
Right.
Well, by the same way, Rav can say, by the same logic, I can understand. The same is true as far as the frame that they used for pouring the yisod. The same thing that they had solid blocks in the places in it where there shouldn't be yisod. So we don't have to understand that, the, like Levi, that it was a perfect square. We can understand, like Rav, that it means that it was a square with things sticking out inside of it.
Because they put in sand.
Because just like we see in the mold for the Kronos, they have to put in something. So also we can understand that in the mold for the Yisod, they could have put in something. And in fact, the Rambam paskins like Rav, that it means that literally there was only Yisod sticking out on those sides, not that it was on all four sides, like Nathan said. And in fact, when the Rambam describes how they built them in there, he mentions these points. When they put the frame for the Yisod, they put in blocks to keep the concrete from going there. And when they put the frames for the Kronos, they put in blocks to make sure that they remain hollow.
Blocks of wood.
Blocks of wood. Yeah, so that's how it is. All right.
Center.
Oh, right.